Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details. Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
If he could just go away, life would be so perfect. The loving words of Corey Richens, allegedly. A jury has been seated in the trial of Corey Richens, who said those words, if he could just go away, life would be so perfect. Now look, people make those statements, people give those thoughts, and it doesn't lead to them murdering their spouse. But sometimes it does. That's Corey Richens allegedly texted her boyfriend on February 15th, the day after Valentine's Day, 2022. Less than 24 hours earlier, according to prosecutors, she'd slipped fentanyl into her husband's favorite sandwich and watched him nearly die. That's the allegation. Nearly die. He just broke out in hives. Throat started closing. He used his son's EpiPen, texted his wife that he might need to go to the hospital. Her response, take a nap. Not a good optic. Less than 3 weeks later, Eric Richens, the guy that allegedly had a sandwich that was poisoned, was dead. This time, 5 times the lethal dose of illicit fentanyl in his bloodstream. Less than a year after that, his widow stood in a Salt Lake City television studio promoting a children's book she'd written about grief, a book featuring illustrations of her husband as an angel watching over their 3 boys. Now she's going to trial for the accusation of murdering him. And then covering it all up. There's a lot in this case. We're going to go through the mindset here of Corey. Or should I say the alleged mindset of Corey. What was going on up there? What was happening in these weeks leading up to and after his death? What points to innocence? What points to guilt? We're gonna kind of go through this and kind of ground ourselves in some of the material of this case that's going to come out in this trial that is not going to be super favorable to Corey. I'll take an honest look at it. Let you guys decide as well. As we do, give us your thoughts in the comments section, Substack, or YouTube. The links are in the description, hiddenkillers.substack.com, or just search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi on YouTube. While you're there, wherever you are, whether you're on the Apple Podcasts, whether you're on YouTube, whether you're on Spotify, whatever it may be, hit subscribe right now. Hit that bell, too, so you don't miss any of our videos as we put them out and our reporting as we put them out. On February 23rd, a Summit County jury will begin hearing this case. And the question they'll have to answer isn't just whether Corey Richens killed her husband, it's why. I mean, the true answer is going to be whether she did it or not. The why is going to lead them there. They have to prove motive. They just, it certainly helps. Helps a jury get from point A to point B. Was this a cold-blooded execution by a woman who'd calculated that death paid better than divorce? Or was it the final desperate act of someone watching her entire world collapse with no exit she could see? Because here's the thing about this case. Every piece of evidence that looks damning starts to blur when you look closer, and every piece that might exonerate her comes with its own uncomfortable questions. Let's start with what we know. Eric and Corey Richens got married in 2013. Three sons, a home in Camas, Utah, about 40 miles southeast of Salt Lake City. Eric owned a successful stone masonry business. Corey ran a real estate company. On paper, it was going. By 2020, things were falling apart in ways that wouldn't become public until after Eric was dead. According to court filings and a petition from Eric's sister, Katie, Eric discovered that Corey had been draining his accounts. She allegedly withdrawn $100,000 from his accounts without his knowledge. Borrowed $30,000 on his credit cards, taken out a $250 home equity line of credit on their family home using what prosecutors described as a forged deed of trust. She'd been appropriating distributions from his business that were supposed to go towards quarterly tax payments, over $134,000 that never made it to the IRS. In total, according to the petition, roughly $494,000 was taken or misused. Eric confronted her, and she promised to pay it back. According to some, she never did. So Eric did something his wife reportedly didn't know about. He consulted a divorce attorney and an estate planning attorney. In October of 2020, he changed his will, created the Eric Richens Living Trust, and transferred his assets into it. He made his sister, not Corey, the trustee and beneficiary of his $500,000 personal life insurance policy. He also transferred his partnership interest in his business to the trust. If Eric died, Corey wouldn't be in charge of anything. Here's the critical question prosecutors want the jury to consider. Did Corey know she'd be cut out? Or that she'd been cut out? Because if she didn't, she might have believed that killing Eric would make her rich. And if she did know, then what exactly was she killing for, if she did it? Again, innocent till proven guilty. We're tackling this from the perspective of motive. If she did it, what was the factor? What were the factors? What were the weights that were sitting on her that made her feel there was no other direction here, if she did it? The financial picture gets uglier the closer you look. By the day Eric died, March 4th of 2022, Corey's real estate company allegedly owed lenders at least $1.8 million. The day after his death, that number reportedly jumped to nearly $5 million. Her business was bringing in around $170,000 in revenue, while her monthly debt service exceeded $250,000, allegedly. She was defaulting on loans, bouncing checks. According to prosecutors, she was standing on the edge of total financial collapse. That's the allegations there. Meanwhile, prosecutors allege she'd taken out at least four life insurance policies on Eric's life without his knowledge, totaling nearly $2 million in death benefits. In January 2022, just 2 months before Eric died, she allegedly tried to change the beneficiary on a $2 million policy Eric held jointly with his business partner. She tried to remove the partner and add herself. The insurance company caught it. Eric found out and changed it back. It's unclear whether Corey knew he'd reversed the change. The prosecutors argue she'd believe she stood to collect millions if Eric died, and they say she had every reason to make that happen. Let's talk about Valentine's Day. February 14th of 2022, according to the charging documents, Corey called a local diner in Camas and ordered Eric's favorite sandwich. You know, it's Valentine's Day. Hey, honey. Bank records show a $41.29 charge that day. Corey wasn't home when Eric ate it, but Eric texted her afterwards saying he didn't feel good. He didn't feel better soon, or if he didn't feel better soon, he said he was going to the hospital. According to prosecutors, Corey told him to take a nap. Let's just take a second, take a breath. Someone's accused of murder here. And when you put that into the equation, it looks pretty damning. Let's say you don't know any of that. Let's say at this moment in time, none of that has happened. And your partner is texting you, I'm feeling kind of crappy after eating. I might go to the hospital if I don't feel better. Yeah, one of two things. Yes, go. Or, just chill. Just take a nap. Neither are necessarily nefarious or right or wrong. You know, if my partner is using the terms, I think I might go to the hospital, as long as they're not like a hypochondriac and they're constantly going to the hospital. I guess it kind of depends someone's relationship with the hospital, if they're going there a lot or not. If this is kind of like an outlier and Eric doesn't usually go to the hospital, I'd be like, oh gosh, if they're saying they're going to go to the hospital, that's something to sniff at. That's like, okay, honey, can I, you want me to meet you there? Want me to take you there? Take a nap. She's allegedly texting her boyfriend. If you could just go away, it'd be great. Then you add that all context to it, and it kind of brings on a little different look. What happened next came out in witness statements. Eric later told two close friends that you almost lost me. He described breaking out in hives after taking a bite. He said he had to use his son's EpiPen and drink Benadryl. He fell asleep for hours. According to the charging documents, Eric Richards had no known food allergies. Prosecutors note that opioids like fentanyl can cause pseudoallergenic reactions, hives, difficulty breathing, anaphylaxis. That was going to be my next question. Like, can fentanyl do that? Apparently so. The next day, February 15th, is when Corey allegedly sent that text to her boyfriend, her paramour. If he could just go away, life would be so perfect. Just imagine texting this stuff, and then if it's in the back of your mind, you're going to execute this plan and you're going to execute your husband. And you're that stupid that you're texting things like that to your boyfriend. Like, they're not going to take a close look at what you've been doing the last few weeks after your husband dies. Oh, wait, they didn't. That took them a little while. Why do people do stuff like that? Because they think they can get away with it, because a lot of them do. 2 weeks later, she allegedly assured him things were about to change. Hang in there until Friday, she reportedly wrote. Life is going to be different, I promise. Wink, wink. On Monday, March 4th, Eric Richens was dead. Here's a prosecutor say happened the night before. Corey, Eric, and Corey's mother, Lisa Darden, were celebrating. Corey had just closed on a $2 million mansion property she intended to flip. Eric reportedly hadn't wanted her to buy it, but now it was done. According to Corey's account to police, she mixed Eric a Moscow mule to celebrate. Then she went to sleep in one of her son's rooms after the child had a night terror. Around 3 a.m., she said she came back to their bedroom and found Eric cold to the touch. The autopsy told a different story than an unexpected death. Eric had 5 times a lethal dose of fentanyl in his system. The medical examiner determined it was illicit fentanyl, not pharmaceutical grade, and there was something else in his gastric fluid. An antipsychotic medication, quantipine, often used as a sleep aid. Court documents also revealed that medications prescribed to Corey, not Eric, were found in his system. Then came the Google searches. Oh, yes. You know, as much as there's a piece to this case where you go, how solid is this? Then comes the Google searches. Investigators examined Corey's phone and found a trail that prosecutors described as incriminating. In the days and weeks after Eric's death, she allegedly searched for what is a lethal dose of fentanyl. If someone is poisoned, what does it go down on death certificates as? Death certificate says pending. Will life insurance still pay? How to permanently delete information from an iPhone remotely? Can cops force you to do a lie detector test? And my personal favorite, luxury prisons for the rich in America. You know, if she's out there texting her boyfriend, her guy on this side, her paramour, everything will change. You'll see. It's not a far stretch that she's looking up luxury prisons for the rich in America. You know, someone should make a fake website for a luxury prison that doesn't really exist and just see what sort of inquiries you get from people wanting to kill their spouses. I bet you could save a lot of lives. Maybe we should do that here at the show and just see what you get. You know, it's like the people that set up the fake hitman sites. Just see what you get. Let the leads come to you. Let the stories come to you before anything even happens. She also reportedly searched for Utah State Prison, Timpanogos Women's Facility, and multiple times for whether her family had donated to the Summit County Police Department. Like, did you donate enough that they're going to look the other way? I mean, that's kind of looks a little weird. And it's one of those things that after the fact you're doing this, had you not done that, you may have a case where it's built on circumstantial evidence and it's not strong enough. But that damn Google search, Corey, you're an idiot. You are an idiot. We've seen it 1,000 times over in this case. Your walk the dog letter. It's a novel I'm writing. Yeah. Yeah. You fail at life the same way you fail at business and the same way you failed at your marriage. The same reason your husband wanted to get the hell away from you. Because you're a failure. And self-centered and probably a narcissist and probably a sociopath and probably a borderline. Probably a lot of things. There's probably a lot. I mean, that's my conjecture, but you sure seem to fit the bill. If you're building a case for premeditation, this is the kind of digital footprint you dream about. But the prosecution's case took a significant hit in October of last year, and this is something the jury will have to wrestle with. This is what we've been talking about in this case. On and off for the last couple of months. The state's theory that Corey obtained fentanyl from her housekeeper, a woman named Carmen Lauber. Lauber allegedly told investigators she bought the pills from a dealer named Robert Crozer. That's a chain, Crozer to Lauber to Corey to Eric. All right? Except now Crozer says he never sold Lauber fentanyl. In sworn statements from September of 25, Crozer told defense investigators he sold Lauber OxyContin. Not fentanyl. When prosecutors interviewed him in April of 25, he said the same thing. He claimed he didn't remember telling detectives back in 23 that he'd sold her fentanyl. He said he was detoxing during that original interview and was out of it. Corey's defense attorneys called this a grenade in the middle of the prosecution's case. If the state cannot place fentanyl in the hands of the defendant, they wrote, the state has no case. Oh, I beg to differ. They pointed out that no fentanyl pills were ever found in the Richens' home. The only physical evidence of fentanyl is what was in Eric's body. The chain of custody depends entirely on testimony, and that testimony is now contested. Hey, Corey, here's what you should have done. You should have put the illicit fentanyl pills in his nightstand. You'd have a hell of a lot better case. See? They were his. He was taking them to deal with you. He didn't like the irresponsible financial chaos that you were injecting into his world with money that wasn't really yours. And he was dealing with it by using. Had you not been so stupid about all this, sneaking it into sandwiches? Just make him look like he was a user. Boom. But she didn't. She took a different path. A path where she thought she was being more sneaky and malicious. And this is why people like this get caught. Because they're stupid. Because they are stupid. So, the judge was not persuaded to release her. He denied bail, noting that a reasonable jury could credit Crozier's original 2023 statement over his recantation 2 years later. But the seed of doubt was planted. The star witness is saying, you know, whoa, recanting on the testimony. The drug dealer changes his story because he was high. I wouldn't say it's a super solid witness for either party in this case. But you know what is? Google. There's more the jury won't hear, at least not easily. Corey's defense tried to introduce evidence that Eric had been abusive. According to court filings, she told her father-in-law that Eric punched her and gave her a black eye, that she had video. That video, however, has never produced. So she made the claim and has zero evidence of it. Does this happen in relationships where there's no evidence? Of course. But you know what? If your spouse punches you and you don't have at least a picture of it to produce, I mean, it doesn't mean you have to like run around and be like, look, everybody, he hit me. But if you're concerned remotely for your safety, just having a little record of it somewhere, you're telling me you didn't take a single picture, Corey, of this allegation of abuse that you have zero evidence of other than the shit that comes out of your mouth, which has already been proven to be pretty full of shit. Well, that's been barred. Because there's no evidence of it. And good, it shouldn't go. You can't just make a claim like that when you're accused of killing someone. Well, they're abusive to me. Well, great, prove it. It still doesn't excuse killing them, but it certainly does change the dynamics of the situation a bit. So the jury will not get the full picture, Corey's attorneys or Corey's discombobulated mind wants to paint. A woman trapped in an unhappy marriage with a husband who controlled the money and allegedly used his fists, except he didn't. Whether that picture is accurate or fabricated, the jury won't have a chance to weigh it. And then there's the shadow that hangs over the entire case. Corey's mother. What? But wait, there's more. And look, I'm going to be clear. Corey's mother has not been charged with anything, not been convicted of anything, not even accused of anything. And I'm not accusing her of anything. I'm just laying out some facts. History, if you will. History is an interesting thing because sometimes, and I'm not saying it does here, sometimes history repeats itself. In 2024, an unsealed search warrant revealed something investigators had been looking into. In 2006, Lisa Darden was living with a woman, a romantic partner. That April, that partner died unexpectedly. The cause of death was an oxycodone overdose. This is Corey's mom, who was there, allegedly, the night Eric OD'd and died, or was poisoned and died. According to the detective's affidavit, Darden had been named the beneficiary of her partner's estate shortly before death. The partner had prescriptions for Oxy and struggled with abusing her medication. But the detective noted she was not in a state of recovery from addiction at the time of her death. Based on his training and experience, he wrote that would, quote, likely rule out the possibility of an accidental overdose. Now take that for what it is. If you're an addict, if you've used, if it's something that you've fallen victim to, people do relapse. And this is 2006. Lisa Darden was never charged with anything. That's where it's at. The proximity is the concern. The proximity to someone overdosing, and apparently some authority figures looking at that going, it's a little odd. Likely rule out the possibility of an accidental overdose, but it's been ruled an accidental overdose. Lisa Darden was at the Richens home the night Eric died. Phone records allegedly showed her expressing disdain for Eric in conversations with Corey. Detective wrote that it is possible she was involved in planning and orchestrating Eric's death. That's interesting. But again, these are allegations. No charges have been filed against Lisa Darden. Her attorney called the allegations baseless, a baseless conspiracy theory, noting that opioid overdoses kill 150 Americans every day. And they do. And people relapse. It is a little weird. It is a little weird that you are that close in proximity in your life. The odds aren't great. I mean, as more and more people die of these horrible addictions and these overdoses to these poisonous chemicals that are available to be put in people's bodies, more and more of us are able to say, yeah, I know someone who OD'd and lost their life. The odds of it being this close of proximity, like one layer or two layers, degrees of separation. Remember the 7 degrees of Kevin Bacon in the 90s? That gets lower. And it's a little weird. And I'm not saying she had anything to do with it. At all. But who was the recipient of the walk the dog letter? Prosecutors have a pattern they can point to, and jurors will have to decide what to make of all of it. So what does a jury do with all of this? Well, they've got 5 weeks. Over 100 witnesses, more than 1,000 exhibits, financial forensic experts, toxicologists, digital investigators, and the defendant herself who may or may not take the stand. I have a bag of Orville Redenbacher's extra butter popcorn ready to pop in the microwave should that happen. I'm going to sit there and have a gay old time. The prosecution will paint a portrait of a woman who searched for lethal doses, took out secret insurance policies, texted her lover about her husband going away, wrote a children's book about grief she allegedly caused, and tried to coach witnesses from jail. The defense will counter with recanted witnesses, missing pills, a contested chain of custody, excluded abuse evidence, and prosecutors they accuse of intimidating witnesses. And somewhere in between those two stories is the truth about what happened in that bedroom on March 4th of 2022. Here's what I keep coming back to. The prenup Eric and Corey signed in 2013 included a clause that made his death more financially favorable to her than divorce. If they split, she got limited assets. If he died while they were still married, she could claim much more. Prosecutors say that's motive. But it's also a trap. a legal structure that made staying together feel impossible and leaving feeling ruinous. Maybe the real question isn't whether Corey Richens is guilty. Maybe it's whether anyone can look at a marriage that ended this way, an alleged theft and possible poison in a children's book about death someone may have caused, and ever really knew what drives a person to that edge. Now today, jurors in Summit County have to figure out, and whatever they decide, three boys will grow up knowing the answer came from strangers in a courtroom. February 23rd is when it begins. We'll bring you all of the trial coverage on our podcast platforms, on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeart, wherever you get it. Be sure to press subscribe. We'll be bringing you the audio of the trial every single day. And then, of course, recaps and conjecture and the expert opinions on it every day on both audio and our video platforms on YouTube and Substack. So be sure you are subscribed to both. Search Hidden Killers of Tony Bruschi and press subscribe so you don't miss any of it. Corey Richens, of course, has pled not guilty to all charges. She is presumed innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. Your thoughts in the comments section. Give it to me, Substack or YouTube. The links are in the descriptions. Press subscribe while you're there. I can't wait to get into the conversation about this case with you as the first gavel is about to be struck. We'll continue our conversation in the comments. Until then, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.